Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, we react to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 box office and ahead of Fast X's release. We're doing the official Fast and Furious franchise tier list.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 261 of Real Blend, a podcast that hopes that the new film BlackBerry leads to Ron Howard's flip phone and Michael Bay's pager.
Ooh.
Who's cinematic universe?
Who's going to direct?
I want to see Ridley Scott's Razor.
Oh, that'll take you back.
Three hours and 35 minutes of
I'd watch that
of technology. Yes. Hello, my name is Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host on the Real Blend podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to be reacting to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 box office, how the film did, what we think that it means, and what it will do moving forward. And ahead of Fast X, Fast 10, Fasten Your Seatbelts, releasing next week, we are officially going to make our Fast and Furious franchise tier list. So that should be really, really interesting. You will notice that noted Fast and Furious fanatic on our show, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., is not here today. He's traveling.
We did
back
that on purpose.
An incredible interview opportunity that he had, which I'll let him talk about later on. But he did give his picks.
Yes.
So we will at least have an idea of how Kevin
his,
feels.
His vote will count. We'll be missing his enthusiasm, but his vote will count.
So at this point right now, we should all write down how many S's we think Kevin has.
Oh, you guys want to place a bet? I like it. I know
out
the number.
Of the nine, out of the nine, I'm going to write down how many S's I think Kevin has. And I will be...
I don't have a pen, but I'm going to...
You just make a guess.
Okay. Can I say it out loud?
No. Sure.
Oh, I guess so, right? Because we...
I think
five. I think he's going to have five.
If he says five, I'm going to say
five
three.
Of nine.
I think he gives three S's.
S's. Okay, we shall see. That is Jake Hamilton.
The
Fox
fact that he's willing to
Chicago.
Give more than one S is astonishing.
Hey, I might surprise you. I might have a couple S's.
Jake, who are you hanging out with tonight?
I'm hanging out with my girlfriend tonight.
Is that as far as we're going to go?
And then my girlfriend and I are hanging out with Tom Hanks.
Explain the story of you hanging out. I mean, is this an if it happens? Are you worried about talking about it? Because it's
I guess every aspect of what we do is an if it happens.
True. Yes.
Tell you what.
What a philosophy.
If this doesn't happen, I'm going to have Gabe cut this out because we'll know in about 4 hours.
Well, let's just let the anticipation be that. And then next week we'll report back.
Fair enough. Yes. Fair enough. Yeah, so, you know, the teaser is, in theory, I should be hanging out in Chicago with Tom Hanks tonight.
And it's a surprise, right? This episode's coming out way after.
My girlfriend is coming with me, and all she knows is it's date night, and we're going somewhere. And she has no idea.
Oh, she didn't even know the event?
No, she doesn't even know. Like, she thinks, I think she thinks we're going to a show, like a musical or something. But she has no idea that Tom Hanks is even in town.
It's Tom Hanks reading from his new novel.
Yeah,
right?
He's on a book tour right now. Yeah, he's a book tour. And so, he's kind of, you know, he's hopping around the country and doing a couple of appearances. And he or his team or whoever.
We can promote a book. We promote books on this show all the time. Tell him to come
by. Yeah, okay. Tommy. they were kind enough to invite me backstage to say hello and spend a little bit of time with them before the show got started. And I'm looking forward to catching up with my old friend Tom, which is the fact that this sort of thing is happening to a guy whose favorite actor is Tom Hanks is just, you know, grew up worshiping the man. And somehow now he's invited me to hang out with him backstage. So such is our life.
Does your girlfriend know why she has to dress up as the flying nun for this date?
Plot twist. She always dresses up as the flying nun. Okay. It's just finally applicable.
Yeah, check out our original Tom Hanks interview for that reference.
I texted this to Jake, and I so desperately want it to happen. I just want Tom Hanks to not remember who you are.
That'd be so good.
Just that he gives you a really polite, like, hey, nice to meet you kind of thing.
Really nice to meet you. Are you a fan? Are you
never never makes eye contact, do you just watch grabs films? Whatever. Yeah. Grabs whatever you have in your hand and signs it. Doesn't even look you in the eye.
Just keeps moving. Keep moving, please. Keep moving. Mr. Hanks is very busy.
Always love to meet a fan. How you doing?
So Gabe Kovach is sitting in the Kevin McCarthy chair. Hi, Gabe. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to play Kevin's
sitting
proxy.
Does that mean that you believe Oppenheimer is going to open bigger than Barbie?
I do today. Just today. I'll play that part.
If you're watching us on YouTube, hello. Thank you for joining us. Please head down, give us a like and a subscribe. Join us here each week. For our audio listeners.
Hey, that's my thing. That's my bit.
Head to youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast. And of course, we're available all the different places where podcast needs met. Have you signed up for Real Blend Premium, by the way? If you want to, go to the description down below to find out how you can do so. You get a number of different things that come with it. You get a Monday episode where we usually play a very fun game. You get an ad-free version of the show and then a newsletter that comes from me every other week. We had one last week. There will not be one this week. Keep your eyes peeled for your inbox. For the latest musings from myself, as if you're not tired of hearing enough from me on Fridays and Mondays. Let's get the Guardians box office reactions. Jake, you said something that I thought was really interesting when the numbers started to come across, that you thought it was a pretty soft opening for Guardians 3. Let me give people the numbers really fast so that they are in the discussion. The film did $118 million for its domestic debut. It did $318 million worldwide total. That's as of today, Wednesday, May 10th, the day that we are recording it. So it's north of $300 million. And that 118, I believe, was more than volume one, but not as much as two. Is that correct? Does that sound
correct.
Right?
Yeah,
I think two is correct. Two might have done
two
a
did
better.
Like 145, 147, something
right.
like that.
Opening. Yeah, right. Okay, so is that the reason why you called it soft opening? Or
yeah, I mean, I think you know, granted, they ended up adjusting up. So I think the initial numbers were like 111. And then it bumped up to like 114. And then I think finally ended up bumping up to like 118 for the weekend, which is fine. But I feel like there was so much hype and recognition for these characters, you know, thinking of them as some of the OG Marvel characters from Marvel at its height, you know, some of the remaining Marvel at its height characters that are still operating. And considering how positive the reviews were and seems to be really positive fan feedback, I really thought it at least would have broken 120 for, you know, for the, I mean, now granted, you have to keep in mind, Guardians 2 was probably always going to be Guardians at its peak, because we're talking about, you know, all the goodwill established from the first film, and Marvel really, you know, near that point of pre-Endgame when it was just only escalating week for or month for month, movie for movie in terms of anticipation toward, you know, what the, you know, the final chapter was going to be. So I think it's unfair to say or expect for volume three to open up higher than volume two. Just a different set of circumstances, a different time, a different level of you know, cultural appreciation for Marvel movies at the moment. Still, it just feels like, especially considering Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness opened at near 200 at this same weekend last year. 118 for Guardians feels pretty soft to me. But as I say so many times, and I feel like a broken record saying this, I feel like the true judgment is going to be how well it does. I do feel like, and this was the case with Doctor Strange last year, that like in 4 weeks, we're going to forget that this movie even came out.
You think?
Oh, I don't know. No. I don't think it's going to have that kind of
One went by June 1st. No one was talking about Doctor Strange anymore.
Yeah, but that was not as good as this movie, I'd argue.
Yeah, but the problem is that this movie isn't that good either.
When you put it in that context, I do understand that the number feels really soft, especially by Marvel standards. And so it brings up the conversation about fatigue, you know, which everyone sort of brings,
which I don't buy, to be honest with you.
But it's just, I think it's the urgency. I don't think there's superhero fatigue because I think the Flash is going to do extremely well.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of curiosity around the Flash. I think the Flash, even though he's been a character who's been around for a long time, it's a fresh property and that nobody's seen a Flash solo movie. There's the Keaton draw. There's the seeing Affleck again in the bat suit. There's a lot of things going on. But you're right in the fact that I really did think that people wanting to see how this trilogy concluded would have meant more people going out to see. Now, there's another factor that it, you know, for all the faults that we give the movies that only exist to push the main narrative forward, so people feel an urgency to go see it opening weekend.
100%.
With Guardians being its own thing and not having to, you know, oh, you got to see this one. I could see it having at least a very strong second weekend because that's before Fast comes in and sort of swipes it out. But
Fast followed by Little Mermaid.
I think that's something that is proving true with the genre, especially in the last few years, is that sure, there's a big core audience. It's worth making these movies at this scale to make $100+ million in your opening weekend, because there, especially for Marvel, there is a built-in audience who wants to see that. And that is not a small number of people that went to go see Guardians in its opening weekend. But the trend of why the Flash we think is going to do so well, why Doctor Strange was as big as it was, is because what brings out the larger audience, the bigger audience that's there for those movies, is that central storyline that they're expecting to get more of, like they're watching a TV show. And I think that that's, I think time and time again, as we're talking about fatigue, it might just be, well, maybe they've just trained their audience to really only care about the central storyline, and you'll get most of them together for the characters that they like.
Just a quick sidebar. You know, they, since we've last recorded, they dropped the new Oppenheimer trailer, and people were talking about the impact that Marvel has on just the cultural psyche, and that people are joking that there's, you know, because in the trailer they show a quick shot of Einstein, and they said that the post credit scene is going to be a shot over Einstein's shoulder as he starts to write E equals, and it's going to cut to black, and it's going to say Einstein will return. God.
I saw someone give an interpretation of what Oppenheimer might mean or stand for, which I thought was fairly interesting.
The discourse for this movie, this small, I don't say call it a small drama, but like I've never seen such a wild discourse over like kind of a non superhero movie in recent memory.
Like a movie based on a biography.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. Let me give you the theory. The theory is that Oppenheimer is a stand-in for Nolan, who feels guilt over the launch of the Dark Knight series and the lasting impact it has had on the film industry, like to that extent, like how that was the seismic bomb that has created this superhero culture, and that the studios took the wrong lessons away from the movie that he tried to create. And like, you're just feeling the ripple effect of his Dark Knight.
That's some hardcore fan projection right there.
Yeah, but the problem is that like,
the story
of Oppenheimer is going to kind of follow that narrative of a man who is like ashamed of his creation. So like, if people are already assigning that parallel, that metaphor to it, like if he follows the story of Oppenheimer, you're going to be able to make that conclusion if you've already decided to. It's not like there are going to be any massive plot twists. They're going to make people go, oh, no, that's not it at all. Like,
I also think that's why I say that's like massive fanboy projection, is because that kind of erases the superhero films that were also very successful before Batman Begins came out. Like, in the fact that Marvel was trying to crack the code well before Batman Begins came out. Like,
but in the latest teaser for Oppenheimer, right before the bomb explodes, he does splice in the Joker going, and here we go. And here's the
question: who's going to be the person to ask Nolan about this at the junket? Are you trying to make a statement about Batman through Oppenheimer?
100%. That's going to be us.
And then I'm going to make him shout pop, pop, and I'm all right. So we think, okay, let's do predictions for percentage of drop off in week two for Guardians. I'll put it at 40%. I'm going to say 40%.
Oh, you think it's going to be that small?
I do. I think it'll hold. There's nothing else really competing against it this week.
Yeah.
Word of mouth is very strong on it.
I'm going to say 55%.
I was going to say 45, which I thought felt low, but 40 sounds like, well, that's aggressively low.
I'm going to say 55% because I still think that there's just going to be a drop off just by nature of what kind of movie that is. I think a majority of people that want to see it are going to rush out pretty quickly to see it. Right. I do agree that like positive word of mouth and lack of competition could, you know, maybe lower it, but I still think it's not going to change the fact that there's going to be a somewhat sizable drop off. So I'm going to say 55%. And I feel like that's being generous.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. We shall see. And then Fast X is coming right behind it. Unusual from this perspective, we'll give you guys a little behind the scenes inside baseball. Normally for a big movie like this, that's coming out in a week and a half, we have interviews lined up or junket opportunities. And it's weird to me that Fast almost feels as massive as it is, like it's coming in under the radar sort of thing, because we haven't done a lot of press for it or heard a lot of press opportunities for it. I think personally, it's possibly because Universal just feels like they don't have to for this movie. But
they have been, right? I feel like the last...
Well,
like
it's weird. It seems to alternate because for Fast 9, what was that, 2 years ago, they did a full blown junket. It was virtual, but we got everybody. It was a huge deal. They did a lot of it. That was when they were starting to do, and that was one of the first, like, some people were back in person kind of junkets. But then for Fast 8, they didn't really do anything. And then Fast 7, they did. So it's just, you know, they seem to kind of be alternating. That is a big cast who, you know, if you talk to anyone, this isn't a huge secret or anything. Those junkets are long. That is a cast that will keep you waiting.
And it's big, and there's a lot.
And it's big, yeah. So, you know, apparently they're trying to find the right words to describe the artistry that is Fast and Furious, because if you know, I honestly, God, I think for Fast 9, I think I had, I'm not joking, a 1 p.m. check-in, and I don't think I did my final interview, which was Vin Diesel, till 9:30 p.m. It was just like, do an interview, okay, come back in 45 minutes. All right, do an interview, come back in an hour. Do an interview, come, you know. Well, wait, what's the story with Kevin where, like, he was on deck for Vin Diesel, and then Vin Diesel was going live on Instagram?
Oh, this is the greatest. So Kevin was on vacation.
We texted him on Instagram while he was waiting.
Kevin was on vacation in Florida, I want to say. And agreed to do the Fast junket because he's a huge fan of the franchise.
Sure.
And was texting us updates about what rooms he was waiting for and who he was on deck for. And at one point said he was on deck for Vin Diesel. And then I happened to check Diesel's Instagram account, and he was live from like somewhere not in the hotel.
Because he just gets up and leaves.
Yeah, and he was with Michelle Rodriguez, and they were sitting on a car talking about like the impact of the franchise and look at how far we've come, Letty, and it's you and me. And meanwhile, Kevin's texting, he's like, "I'm on deck for Vin."
It's one of those things that's really frustrating because when you get it, and a lot of times this happens, you know, with people that do take a long time. Oftentimes, you get them, and they're pretty great. I mean, I will say that every interview I've had with Vin Diesel, I've had to wait a very long time, but every time I've walked away going, damn, like he's charming as hell and he gives you what you need in an interview. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Did I tell you him taking over CinemaCon and the presentation and going off script for?
Did he talk about the movies?
He talked about everything. I mean, he came out for the Universal presentation and, he said that he's like immediately like I'm going off prompter, and he just rambled on.
Right now Universal's going, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
But to your point, it couldn't have been more entertaining. He was terrific. He's a storyteller. He's a character. You legitimately cannot tell what's going to come out of his mouth next, and it was phenomenal. It was a highlight of the week. All right, let's get to the Fast and Furious tier list. Gabe is going to take over from this point on, and we will first explain how the tier list works, and then we'll start at the beginning.
Yeah, if this is your first time joining us for a tier list, we have some awesome ones for Batman. We have Marvel. I think we also have the DCEU up to a certain point. And basically,
we have Star Wars, which will make you claw your face off.
That's true. That's true. So go check those out. This is a fun format. It's fun. And I think our unique spin is that we each place it on our own list in a way. We all sort of vote on where we would put it. And we take an average of that to create the Real Blend tier list, which means that it is just a hot garbage mess. And that's what makes it fun. So every time we look at these, we groan. And now we're going to make another one that's probably going to make us groan. It is unfortunate that Kevin is not here. Although if he was here, we'd probably have to do this over two episodes because he loves these movies and I love him for it. And I like them more than most. Some, I know some people do unironically love these as well, but, anyway, so we'll just jump in and we're going to go in order, and put up, I don't know that we need to review every single one of them, or how many thoughts we have for all of them. Well, cause a lot of these,
where do you have to be?
You and I were talking about this. It's not something I go, a lot of these I don't go back and rewatch. Sure. So this is going to be,
I have some strong opinions on some of these.
And that's what we're here for. Well, yeah. Let's kick it off with the movie that kicked everything off, The Fast and the Furious. Well, who has thoughts? Who wants to start?
I gotta be honest, that's an A for me. Like, I loved it when it came out. It's the one that I've probably seen the most. I love the smallness of it. I love the simplicity of it. I love, you know, it's a nice reminder of like where that series came from. I think, you know, that was that initial core cast had such a great chemistry. And at the end of the day, it was just a movie about a cop trying to catch, these guys and involved in this world in street racing. Like, that's all it was. That's it, started there, stopped there, and that's it. And like the big action sequence was just a race, just two cars racing. Mm-hmm. And you remember how like insane it used to be that the idea of like the cars going under the 18 wheelers and remember like it was all about stealing DVD players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's such a nice little time capsule of very early 2000s.
I'm not going to argue A. I probably would have been B, trending A. I would give it, I would almost lean A because of the impact that it has, you know, being the first one, working as well as it did. Still kind of like as Jake was saying, understanding the kind of movie that it was meant to be. I mean, clearly, I think the franchise changes its opinion of itself drastically over the years. But this came in with, we are a car culture movie. The scenes where they are partying, you know, around the race made sense in that in that film. They don't make sense anymore whenever they take place in random countries, because I don't think that they're happening as much in the new. If you guys saw the trailer for the new Fast X, they have one of those scenes and it ends up with everybody pointing guns at each other. And Momoa is like stroking the barrel of one of the,
he's doing his version of the, what is it? The Enchantress from Suicide Squad. No. He's doing the Enchantress.
It's great. So yeah, I'm fine with A for the first one. I'm
look
okay.
At us.
I might shock you guys. And I think that this is going to sort of tell you everything you need to know about what my personal list would look like and how I'm going to be moving forward. If I were to give just one film in this franchise an S, it would be The Fast and the Furious.
What?
I love this movie. And again, this comes from, this is a personal list, you know, and I'm coming from what this movie means to me and that this was a very important movie to me growing up. I was the right age to get kind of obsessed with whatever the new action weird movie thing is. And I got wrapped up in the car culture.
Sure.
That this movie sort of represented. I think if you talk to, and I'm not like a big gearhead. I don't have like a nice car or a project car. Or I don't necessarily work on stuff like that. Like I don't pretend to be obsessed with cars the way that people are. But growing up as a kid, I was obsessed with this movie. I was obsessed with playing video games where you got to customize cars. And a lot of people who are car people now that are my age, Jake's age, who were sort of impressionable at that time, they point to this movie as like, yeah, that's why I thought that it would be cool in high school to have a car with a fake wing on it and some decals and neon lights underneath it. And like,
yeah,
it influenced so much of a culture for a long time for me. And for so many people, I think are very passionate about it. And I sort of categorize, and I, there are exceptions to this, and there's a lot of the Fast and Furious that I love after this, but I would say that the Fast and Furious has changed a lot since this first movie. I would not say it has improved. And I don't know that you could remake this movie. Like, I don't know that, I don't know what this, what the version of Fast and Furious now looks like ten movies later. That's just iterating on the core idea of this versus going totally crazy. I'm not saying that's better. I don't know what that is, but for me, I just love this movie. And so I would put it at an S, and I'm okay with it at an A. I totally get that.
Yeah.
All right. So wait, what did Kevin say?
Kevin put this at an A. It's going
to
put us.
Oh, I would have thought he would have said S, to be honest with you.
I was a little surprised. Yeah. We'll see how your wager on how many S's he has. But yeah, that puts us right at an A. Three A's, one S. I'm throwing an S out there because
it's an important
movie to me. But another, any final thoughts before we move on?
No.
Another interesting entry in the Fast and Furious franchise, which is Too Fast, Too Furious. I unironically love this movie. Kind of ironically, I guess, but it's I think it's ridiculous. It's a movie that anytime it was on like the USA Network, I was like, yeah, let's just have that on in the background just because it's absolutely ridiculous. I think it's my favorite performance in the series from Tyrese. Because I think he gets so much to do and he's so kind of ridiculous. It's an absolutely ridiculous movie, but
okay, ridiculous to the extent that you're giving it a high grade, or
no? I would say I enjoy this movie. This is one of the Fast and Furious movies that I think hits the ridiculous mark, but I actually enjoy.
Okay,
I think I would give this a B, trending C, but I would put it at a B in that I enjoy watching it.
All right. I would put it at a C. To me, it feels like one of the few, which is funny to say for this franchise, forced sequels, in that they take Paul Walker, they move him to another city. You know, he's got to infiltrate another gang, essentially. And this one felt annoying in ways that the other ones didn't.
Yeah.
It's intentionally ramped up. It really felt like they just took like, hey, let's take what worked in the first one, but try to translate it to another city kind of thing. And while I think Ludacris came in this one as well, too.
Yeah.
He introduced in too. Yeah. You know, they're characters that have lasted the entire franchise. You can give it credit for sort of launching it that way. But I'm a little bit stunned that this franchise survived after two. And I think it's because Tokyo Drift went in such a different direction. So I'm at a C. So Jakey, where are you?
I'm at a D. I really dislike this one. It really feels like they had a story in mind and then found out that Vin Diesel wasn't going to be a part of it. And so they kind of just took 30 minutes going through and scratching out Dom and writing in Tyrese's character. I feel like you can see that, like, the plot was probably supposed to be like he has to call Dom back to you know, because Dom knows this world and all that. I you know, it's one of those things that's not as good as the original. It's a bad retread of the original, no pun intended. But it also, like, they weren't at that point yet where they recognized, okay, let's just have fun and get ridiculous with this. So you don't even, you know, even though you don't have the simplicity of the original, you don't even have like the stupid, ridiculous action of some of the later films. It just feels like a nothing Fast and Furious movie. It might be, I don't want to give anything away, but it's definitely near the bottom of my fast ranking. So that's a D for me.
Jake says D. I say B, trending C. I could definitely see is definitely not a crazy idea for me. And then Sean says C. Kevin,
don't you do it.
Put it.
Bit of the tiebreaker. Bit of the tiebreaker here.
Kevin has put it at D.
Whoa!
What? Whoa!
Yeah.
Kevin's feeling spicy.
He said, I'll give you a bit of commentary that I had with him. He said that if there was one that he had thought maybe he would put an F, it would be this, but he wanted to keep it at a D.
Interesting. Kevin. Didn't see that coming at all.
Kev.
With two Ds, a C and a B. I think that averages out to a C for us, because we typically, when we're on the fence, we go for the more positive, because
all right,
you know, we're here for positivity, folks. Be nice.
Wow.
So Too Fast, Too Furious is going to be
all right.
A C.
All right.
We're starting to hit my limits of enjoying this franchise, folks. I'm just going to foreshadow that right now.
You're crazy. This is where you get crazy,
though. No. You think I'm crazy that I like this?
No, but I think it's crazy that you don't like the rest of them. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just because there's gems. There's gems.
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Jake, you take the start on this one.
This is one that I'm not as familiar with as some of the rest of them. I remember liking it. I remember liking a lot of it. I remember liking a lot of just sort of the set and the action. I remember it felt like it was kind of going back to the world of street racing, which Too Fast, Too Furious really got away from, because Too Fast, Too Furious was kind of getting more into the crime element.
Right.
The thing that holds me back is the lead actor. I believe his name is Lucas Black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I can't stand him. I really, just as an actor, I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I just really don't like him as an actor. And it really, okay, it makes that movie very difficult for me to watch. I almost have to watch it on.
Was he a kid in Sling Blade?
You, like, yes, he was.
A little kid,
yeah,
in Sling Blade?
Yeah. And he's had a pretty solid career, like, up, honestly, through this. And I really apologize if he's a real bland
fan. He's
fan
very bland.
Yeah, yep. And it makes that movie really difficult for me. So I'm going to give it a C.
Sean?
He is definitely a step down from either Paul Walker or Vin Diesel, right? Like, yeah, if he's supposed to be the surrogate to those two, it's difficult. However, I'm at an A for Tokyo Drift. I think the driving in it is inspired, especially where it came in that franchise. I love the racing sequences in it. I give it the nod for starting to push this franchise towards more diversity. You got a little Bow Wow who was cast in it, and you had Sung Kang, who became a significant character in it. And then it had that bonkers ending where, sure, Vin shows up at the end of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, people don't remember when that happened, but like when that happened, everyone was kind of like, wait a second, hold on. You're doing an Avengers initiative before Marvel even existed.
Yeah.
And so, I agree with Jake on Lucas Black. I think he's really boring. However, I think Tokyo Drift did a lot to reset this franchise after the terrible Too Fast, Too Furious. And I would give this an A.
Yeah, I'm with you, Sean, in that I love this movie. This is a return to form for me in the franchise. This, I think, you know, I mentioned like car culture and stuff like that of the first one and what that meant. This was that again. This was a different car culture. This was car culture in Japan. This was like, if anyone has seen the anime, like Initial D, like this is that. It's what the franchise, I think, could have been. And maybe it wouldn't have lasted this long, and maybe it wouldn't have been this successful. So it's hard to argue because it is a successful franchise. But this is a version that it could have been, which is globetrotting, sure, but let's see what other car culture looks like around the world, and let's find characters there, let's find interesting stories to tell there. The franchise didn't really go on to do that, but for me, this is an absolute favorite in the franchise. It is up there with the best of them. I'm thinking of giving it an S because it's damn, I like it that much. I do love it that much. I get the Lucas Black thing. It's not distracting for me. I know he's not a great performer, and that's fine. And not in this movie, at least. But as rote as the sort of trope of like the white foreigner and like the guy, the fish out of water, and sort of learning about a culture through his eyes, is that's a thing that's definitely of that time and something that happened over and over and over again. But I think it's a very effective storytelling structure, and I loved him sort of being thrown into this world and having to learn, you know, the school system, and then learning the car culture there, and sort of getting wrapped up in the crime and all of that. I find this movie completely compelling. I would put it at an S, but an A feels right as well, and I'll give it an A.
Jake, you did a what? C?
I did a C. Yeah.
A C.
All right. C to A is where'd Kev go?
Kevin put it at a B.
Interesting.
Where do we want to put that? Where does that average out? Again, I'm leaning like S. Like I don't want to say it just to affect the list.
If you're
itself.
A trending S,
way trending S,
and I'm A, and Kevin's B, and Jake is C. I mean, I think that's A.
That feels like a high B to me.
All right, we'll put it at B. We'll put it at B. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I wish I'd put it in S now that I think about it.
I think people are going to be annoyed.
It's so good. It is so good. I do love that movie. Okay. Up next, we have Fast and the Furious.
D. This is a D.
That's a D for me as well.
This is a boring,
it's boring, so boring, boring. That's what movie. I was gonna say. How do you make it's these so action, this action, and how do you make the cars driving through caves boring?
There's a pretty good opening sequence with Letty and the tanker. I forget what they're getting out of the tanker.
Sure.
It might be fuel kind of thing, and then she ends up on the hood of Dom's car. Outside of that, I don't remember a lick of this. I know that there's a cartel. I think there's like a cartel and they're trying to run something from Mexico under the border. And the way that they figure out how to do it is to go underground in caves.
Yeah. And, which should be amazing.
Right. But it looks terrible.
Oh, it's so dark
and you choppy. And I'm stunned that this is Justin Lin, who is one of the better, if not the best, director in the franchise. And I think the staleness of this one turned them on to the idea of, we got to start introducing fresh blood, because this is the last one that's the core four.
Yeah.
You know, that the focus was on Diesel, Paul Walker, Jordana Brewster and Michelle Rodriguez, without much else being added. I forget who plays the villain in four, but
It's Laz Alonso, right? The guy from
how do you remember
that? Mother's Milk. And I only know that because I love The Boys, and I was like, oh, that's what he was in. I would not have remembered that.
So I think this is that for this is me D trending F.
Wow.
Because I think it is the worst in the franchise.
I'm with you guys in that it is.
Wow.
I don't like this movie. This is one that I think I saw when it came out, was disappointed, and I don't think I've gone back since. Like I said, the trivia about Laz Alonso is only because I retroactively looking at him through The Boys, I was like, oh wow, he was in this. Not great. And where do you guys think Kevin put it?
Kev, I don't probably think Kevin liked this one. Yeah,
Kevin put this one at a B.
Oh, no.
What? I cannot figure him out.
Yeah, that's wrong. Yeah. But I think 3D's just pretty much cancels out the B, right? We're not going to bring that up.
That is a D.
That is a D.
Wow, look at this really eclectic mix of Fast movies right now.
My S bet not looking so good.
Yeah, wow. I need you guys on this one because I know people love Fast Five, which is what we're getting into here.
Yeah, Fast Five is an S for me.
It's an S for me too. It's the only S in the franchise.
Yes. It's an S. It's my favorite one. I love, legitimately, unconditionally love Fast Five.
Yeah.
I do too. Fast Five is incredible. Five, I can't believe it was as good as it was.
Yeah.
Starting off with the breaking that car out of the moving train.
Yeah.
And that incredible stunt sequence where the bridge is approaching and the two of them have to hop into that sports car and then drive it off of the cliff. Phenomenal. The introduction of The Rock was outstanding. His fight with Dom, you know, in where he ends it by burying the wrench into the concrete is incredible.
Just like those two in the setting of Rio.
Yes. And then Rio and the safe break and all that.
It's the perfect blend of like one foot in each camp, or like one foot in like the established reality that this series was born from, tip of the cap to the original film, but also one foot in the like, okay, we're going to get a little crazy. We're not going to turn it up to 11, but we're going to turn it up to like a 7. We're going to get like that safe sequence was both like, oh my God, that's absolutely ridiculous. But then also there's a degree where you're sort of like, but maybe.
Right. They sold it to the point where you were like, can those cars do that?
Yeah, exactly. I love Fast Five.
Okay, so this is one I have to admit that I need to go back and rewatch because I don't remember it very fondly. It's not one I've seen in a while. But this is, I was like, after four, I was pretty much checked out on these.
Sure.
So it was harder and harder to get me interested. But I know people love this one. So this is one I wanted to rewatch I would have liked to rewatch before we did this. I have it, again, in my foggy memory at like a B at best, because I know there was a lot of great stuff to it. And I've had people tell me as such. But I'm curious if I'll enjoy it more at a rewatch, given how much I know you guys love it. You guys all had it at an S, right? Both of you?
Yeah, that's an S for me.
It's my only S in the franchise.
Kevin has it as an S as well. And I will concede. I will not try to pull that down to an A. I will concede the S. That's fair enough. I know.
I'm very content with this tier list right now.
This is fairly remarkable. I'm on Rotten Tomatoes for Fast Five, 78% for critics, 83 for audience.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have been higher, to be honest with you.
Same. Yeah, same.
Interesting.
The Rock is so good in that.
Oh,
movie.
My God. He's so good.
He's so good. It's like the best use of the Rock
in any
movie.
Up next, we have Fast and Furious 6. However, we'll get to that on the other side of this break. So we'll be right back.
Oh, damn you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. And we are back with Fast and Furious 6. Who wants to kick us off?
It's a B trending C for me.
Okay.
It's and I'd be content to go C on it, to be honest with you. There's not so shifts to London. Letty comes back from the dead. Starts to feel like it's more soap opera than anything else. The plot twists and the things that are happening in it are not as interesting. Can't even think of a really. I know that the big sequence is the ridiculously long runway. The airplane.
Have you ever seen like the map of it? The map of it is like just a line across Russia.
But outside of that, I don't remember any real signature, you know, set piece from it that stood out. I guess is it the reintroduction of Statham surface in this one, and his brother. Who's played by who knows which one?
Luke Evans.
So, C. I'm at a C on this one.
I don't know that Statham comes back in this one. I think it's just Luke
Evans. Does Statham show up in 7? Oh, okay.
I think that's how that goes.
And Letty has amnesia. Everything about this one feels soap opera.
And they just get so crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What'd you say, Sean?
C. I'd go C.
Look, I'm really trying not to be a negative Nancy. There's a lot of these I would just throw an F and I like to forget in my life. But, you know, I'm trying to engage with the material here. For me, it's a D. It's unremarkable. I barely remember it. This is where they start to blend together for me with. And again, I just was checked out and really didn't like this franchise when these were coming out. So I have it pretty firmly. In a D. Right. But I don't have any strong opinions in either direction.
It's for me, it's a C, just because, you know, it lost so much of the goodwill that Fast Five was starting to build and earned. Sean said it perfectly. It's starting to feel like a soap opera at this point. Anytime a character is brought back with amnesia, that's when you start going, oh, no, what direction are we going in? And as we move forward, all of the negative attributes that I have started really hating about this series, I feel like we're born in 6, like the seeds and the kernels of all of the negative attributes of the rest of the series. This is where I started feeling them kicking off. So they don't start getting as bad as they get a little bit later. But this is where you can start telling that you're starting to see some cracks in the armor. So it's a C for me.
C for you, Sean, you said again, C.
I said C also. Yeah. It's another situation too, where like now they have too many characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so nobody really gets a chance to do much of anything.
Yeah. Where do you guys think Kevin had it? This is fun.
Kevin's probably at like an A. I'm gonna say he's at a B.
Kevin is also at a C.
Wow. He is. I don't want to say he's negative, but he is a lot lower rankings than I thought he was going to.
Yeah, I can't speak for him here. I would imagine that he loves the franchise, but I think a part of loving this franchise for most of the people that love it is getting it, like getting the.
But see, that's my problem is I don't think the cast gets it.
That's a different conversation. I mean, do they not, or do they? I mean, if you're cashing checks from $1 billion movie, you're probably like, convince yourself you love it.
Hey,
easily.
If you're cashing checks for $1 billion movie, do the junket.
Fair enough. So that's C, huh?
Yeah, putting that firmly at a C.
Fast six. Okay.
We're back to another one that I think is a favorite for some, favorite for many, which is Furious 7. Furious 7. Who feels strongly about Furious 7 and wants to start that one off?
I'm going to give 7 an A. I really like a lot about 7. I don't think you can fairly judge it without acknowledging what they had to do, which is find a way to somehow make the tragic death of Paul Walker work. I mean, they were in the middle of filming, I believe, whenever he was killed. And the way that they sort of turned the film into this beautiful send off by his friends for both him as a person and his character, Brian, I thought is handled in a really beautiful and classy way. That final shot of the two cars taking two different roads, I just thought was really fantastic. And then everything leading up to that, I remember really enjoying. I remember a lot of the action sequences going like, okay, like stupid, but sure, I'll run with this. I'll take this. I remember really liking 7, so I'm going to give that an A.
John? The 7 is also an A for me. And I give all the credit in the world to James Wan, who I just think is a really great director, who, like Jake said, got handed an impossible situation and salvaged an incredibly enjoyable action film out of this. Great set pieces. This is the cars parachuting out of the plane, which leads to a mountain chase. This is the cars jumping from building to building in the Middle East, which is just preposterous.
Ridiculous.
But still fun. This is, to me, the last time that the franchise winked at itself, you know, in the right way. I think everything else from here on out misses for me. I liked Furious 7 a lot. And also, like Jake said, the send off for Paul Walker was extremely well done. And we're going to talk about this in some of the other ones. The more that they continue to reference him or come up with ways to suggest that he's there, feels like I wish they came up with a different way to not put Brian in the world.
I agree with that. Like, I agree with that.
Him pulling into the driveway to be there. I would say,
was it 9? Didn't he like pull in the driveway? Yeah. Yeah.
All that feels forced. You had a great ending in 7 and they should have left it alone at that point. So I'm in a day. That's 2 A's.
I actually caught up with this one fairly recently. I think before 9 came out, I was trying to catch up on these because that didn't watch 7 when it came out, and I didn't watch 8. I was fully checked out of this franchise by that point. Just not interested. But I did rewatch. I did watch this recently because I was like, well, let's catch up on this. Let's see what they have. I still did not enjoy myself watching this movie. The ridiculous nature, you know, like I said, I think it's just something I continue to bat up against. Of the ridiculous stuff doesn't work for me, and I just kind of look off the screen at too many times. I think James Wan is a tremendous filmmaker, and I like several set pieces in this. I remember thinking were really enjoyable. This is the one that has the homage to The Lost World, right? With the bus hanging off. Like, isn't Brian like hanging from off a cliff in this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
fighting a guy in a bus as it's
which is
falling
cool.
off. Yes.
Sure.
And he ends up running along the top of it to jump back onto the
And that's the kind of homage that a James Wan or a Justin Lin can pull off and really feels authentic and interesting and not kind of like cheap, you know, like you're watching, you know, like any kind of movie can just do the set piece again and it feels a little cheap, but it felt earned in that. And I do like the way that they leave Brian. I think that scene is great. I get it. And it's very tough to do. And I think that they handled that character and I think they handled him with a tremendous amount of respect. So I there's a lot that I do like about it in that sense. I couldn't put it above a B. I'm a B trending C, I think, at best, just because so much of the style of Fast and Furious that this gets into just doesn't work for me. Where do you guys think Kevin put it?
I think Kevin would S.
This is probably an S for Kevin.
Kevin put it an S.
Yeah.
So with one S, two A's, and a B trending C, I think that puts it pretty firmly in the A.
That's an A. Yeah.
I have a feeling you two are pretty happy with this list so far. This feels
I feel like everything's aligning with.
I would love Tokyo Drift to be an A. It really upsets me that Tokyo Drift's not an A. It really does. But that's
fine. Honestly, seeing 1 and 7 as the A's, I'm all right with Tokyo Drift being the B. I honestly, and I know we're not supposed to compare that way, but that feels okay. It feels okay.
Yeah.
We should make a drinking game out of every time we do this and say, we know we're not supposed to compare.
I mean, it's a little easier when you only have, you know, 9 or 10 films.
Sure.
But yeah, the bigger ones where we're like, whoa, the Marvel one. When you get
I think it's going to be harder not to compare whenever we do something like indie. And, you know, that's going to be harder to say, well,
stay tuned, kids. Have you finished your rewatch of indie yet?
I haven't done Crystal Skull.
Okay. Oof. Interesting. Well,
that and Temple of Doom were the ones I was most curious to rewatch.
More to come on that. I'm excited to do the rewatch for the tier list on that. That's one we can definitely fit in.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts about Temple of Doom.
Okay. This is where I have to make a confession. I don't enjoy making this confession. The Fate of the Furious. I planned on coming back to watch 7 and 8. This was a couple years ago. I watched 7, couldn't get myself to watch 8. I was like, I just can't do it. I would have loved to watch it before this, but we moved this up on our schedule, so I didn't have time to, in our production schedule, so I didn't have time to actually catch up on this. I intend to watch the movies, but I have not seen Fate of the Furious. I do love F. Gary Gray. I've seen a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I was at CinemaBlend covering this. I'm fairly familiar with the scope of it, and the submarine, right, through ice, that's this one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I need and you to
watch it. Punches a rocket.
I will abstain from voting for this because I have not seen it, but you two can take it away.
To me, it's a D.
It's also a D for me.
Wow.
It's incredibly stupid.
And also, going back to 4, it's boring.
It is boring. And a lot of that, to me, goes to F. Gary Gray, who I think can direct an action film, but seems just not in tune with the material here. This one introduces Dom's baby. Which is ridiculous. Like, this is where if 6 was the beginning of the soap opera-ness of Fast,
agreed.
This is the one that just took on every ridiculous, stupid type of plot twist. The girl who Dom was with in 5 ends up coming back, and she's the one who's the mother of the son. Is that correct? The only thing that I remember being redeeming about it is Statham having that fight where the baby's in the carrier and he's fighting people as he moves the baby around safely in the carrier. I think that's an 8. It might be a 9, but I'm pretty sure it's an 8. But then everything with the iceberg and the missile and all of that is just terrible.
Can I ask? Would you say this is something that's maybe a little celebrity gossipy? I don't think we enjoy getting to this territory, but it sounds like, and the sense that I got from like 6 and on, especially, is this full on talking about F. Gary Gray? Is this full on like Vin Diesel is kind of taking over and running the show, and they're rewriting stuff in his hotel room the night before? Stories that we hear off the top, like just that, and completely.
I would say if you laid out all of these films in front of me and blindly said at one point Vin Diesel takes over and it's the Vin Diesel show, point out where you think it happens, I think I would be able to say right there, and I would point at 8.
Well, and there's even the moment in 8 This is the one where Rock says Dominic Toretto just went rogue, right?
Yeah.
So there's a sequence where Dom has to go against the team because essentially the bad guy. Oh, this is Cypher. This is Charlize Theron getting introduced, right?
Theron.
So she has Theron. She has Dom's baby and is essentially saying, you're going to have to go do this stuff for me against your team kind of thing. So he has to, Dom has to betray his team. And there's a scene where Dom runs Rock off the Hobbs, I guess, runs him off the road and his car is flipped upside down. And like Vin Diesel has to look into the car and realize he's betraying the Rock. But we learned after the fact that they were not on set the same day that they shot those because Rock refused to be on set with Vin Diesel anymore at that point. And then that was Rock's last time being. And so if you watch 8, they're really rarely ever on screen together. And if they share a scene, you could tell that they shot it at different times. So
what is it 8 or what is the one with that famous or now maybe infamous shot where like it's the Rock and Vin Diesel, I think in like the backyard. And every time it like cuts to one of their coverages versus the other, each one's taller than the other. And it kept like, or they do like the dimensions to like make Vin taller than the Rock. And
yeah, we're going to get into some of that talk, I think, in this next one.
I don't remember.
I'll keep us moving so we can wrap up the
D. Where'd Kevin put
it? You both put D?
Yes.
Yes.
Kevin has it as at a C. That'll average us out to the D. I don't think that I would have brought it any higher, I imagine. But eventually, sit down, I'll watch Fate of the I'll find the time. I saw this in theaters. Hobbs and Shaw, which we are including. It's sort of a Fast and Furious movie. By name alone. Hobbs and Shaw, where are you guys at?
I don't think I can go above a C. I can go above a C on Hobbs and Shaw.
Pretty high.
It's fun. Those two are fun together. Like they carry it further than it should have. Idris Elba as Black Superman is fun.
Yeah.
It's just too long. Like, but the movie should have ended before they end up going to, you know, Samoa, and then Rock's entire Samoan family joins the fight.
That's right. And
Like, what fucking movie is this? And then they're fighting in a volcano, if I remember.
And that fight was like the middle of the night, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of the fight, they cut from like they're in the middle of a battle, and they're fighting hand-to-hand combat in this like army sized battle. And then all of a sudden they cut to another thing and it's like daytime. And I was like, I get that I'm a nitpicky, paying attention to the details more than other people, but I'm pretty sure that was like not intended or just very jarring for the audience to be like, also it's daytime now. And maybe you believe that they've been fighting
nighttime. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe you believe that they've been fighting for 11 hours straight. And
that movie, it feels like they were fighting for 11 hours straight.
Are
you at a D?
This is when I went back to watch 7 and planned on watching 8. Was for Hobbs and Shaw, actually, that I remember. And Hobbs and Shaw put the nail in the coffin of me having any interest in this franchise. And I'll just try not to say it again because I've said it so much. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work for me. I sit there and I all I can think while I'm watching this is they were stealing DVD players and now this guy is a superhero. And before I didn't like it because they acted like superheroes, and now this guy they've given superpowers, and I just it's not my Fast and Furious, you might say. So I pretty much firmly put this in the F for me.
Wow.
Yeah, I just couldn't stand this movie.
I'm curious, Jake, where are you then? Where are you?
For me, it's a C for me because it's for me almost like the reverse Tokyo Drift, whereas like I couldn't stand the lead of Tokyo Drift, but I thought the action was admirable and worth watching. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a flip. I enjoy the banter and the chemistry between Statham and The Rock. I liked Idris Elba. I thought they were fun to watch, but I thought the action for an action movie coming from this franchise was generic and forgettable, which is a pretty bad sin to commit in in a Fast movie.
So we have, I'm at an F. Jake, you said a C.
C.
Sean, you said a
D. I said a C also.
You said a C.
I said a C. I can't go higher than a C, right. But I'll go C.
C, okay. And then Kevin gave it a B. Kevin gave it a B, which I think will put us in the C.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty easily in the C, which is fine. Which, you know, I don't really care either way, guys, if I'm being honest. So I'm not that upset. F9 is what they called it, right? It's just F9? Yeah.
Because it's just because it's fine.
F9. I have seen this one. I did go see this one. F9, the Fast Saga. Doesn't it have like a big F9? Yeah, I think it's officially F9, the Fast Saga. So who knows what it's at? The franchise is actually called? Is the franchise Fast and the Furious? Is it just Fast now? What about the ones that have Furious?
They're not Furious anymore.
No,
well, we learned what happened to them with the fate of the Furious.
This is the return of Justin Lin. For F9, Jake, take it away. Where are you at?
I'm going to say C, trending D. I thought that there were some halfway admirable action sequences, but still just enough ridiculousness where it's just makes me roll my eyes and just go, I can't. It's hard for me to take this seriously. Like, and honestly, like, I know everyone got a kick out of the car going to space. But one, I felt like that moment was ruined by like years of speculation and jokes that the series was going to go to
space.
Which
is why they decided to do it.
Exactly. And so them doing it just sort of felt like, okay, were you guys planning on doing this? Or did you just listen to everyone on the red carpet go, when are you going to take the series into space? And then hold over the microphone. I'm going to say a C minus, a C trending D, whatever you want to call it. A low C for me.
It is also a low C for me. The only thing keeping it out of D is John Cena.
Yeah.
Who I think is...
Oh, you like him in this.
A good addition. I do like him in this. I don't think he makes any sense as Dom's brother and the opening sequence, at the race. The flashbacks to Dom's father dying on the racetrack are terrible, but... Cena brings that level of, I know how ridiculous this is and I'm going to match it. I'm going to meet you exactly where you need me to be, is pretty great. And even in the trailers for Fast X so far, he looks to me to be the highlight. Like, he looks like he's having a really good time with a rocket truck and all this stupid stuff. But 9 also has that, if I remember correctly, it's 9. The race through the jungle where Dom is able to snag the rope bridge.
Yes.
Fuck, I think I might want to put it in D. I'm not sure. Oh God.
You heard Jake mention that they went to space, right? And they were wearing scuba suits.
Yes.
Where they're...
Oh, but this one has magnets. This one has magnets though.
This is a great stunt.
This is a C. I'll give the magnets a C. C.
I think you could argue that it's, my opinion of this is a little unfair given that I haven't seen Fate of the Furious. Maybe Fate of the Furious doesn't matter at all. I get a sense that maybe it doesn't matter at all. But
it doesn't.
No. So there are a couple stunts that I liked in this, but it hits that ridiculous note that it just makes my eye roll and I just don't enjoy. So I'm going to put this at a D, trending F, but at a D, because I do think that Justin Lin is I do think Justin Lin is a great director. He's certainly a great director of action, and building a set piece and building really interesting action. And the fact that they give him the toys for this franchise, I think is awesome. So, and this has a lot of cool toys that he got to play with. And so I'll give it a D because all of the ridiculousness, but it's a slight bump for that. Where do we think Kevin put F9?
B. I think he gave it a B.
I'm going to say B.
He put it at a B. He put it at a B. So we have all a D, a B, and two Cs, right?
Yeah.
And you guys just kind of commanded this list together. I think it's me and Kevin kind of canceled each other out, and then it was just you guys, middle of the road.
All right, guys, I'm gonna put my phone up to the screen and show you a little bit of perspective.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh, why does he look so small?
But then it keeps going the other way, because then there are shots where Vin looks.
Oh my gosh.
Look at that. Now look.
Oh my gosh, it's so bad.
Oh, look at how Vin totally is. Yeah.
Which one is that in? Which one is that in?
That is Fast and Furious 6.
And we gave that a C, guys. Six. I don't even know that. You gave that a C.
Well, then also we got to bring up that Hobbs and Shaw has that ridiculousness where the two of them negotiated about who could get hit the most. And no one could lose a fight kind of thing. Yeah. You know, Statham and The Rock couldn't lose a fight.
Just insane. Just insane.
Stupid.
Well, let us know, folks, what you would have put on your list. Link us to your list if you want to go to Tiermaker and make your own list. Let us know what we got wrong, what you agree with, what you disagree with. And then, you know, we'll celebrate Fast 10 next week.
I feel very good about this.
That's a damn good looking list.
It's a pretty good looking list.
I want to take a picture and send it to Kevin.
Well, don't send it yet. I have an idea. I have an idea for him to have it revealed on the show, but we'll see. Ooh, we'll see if it works out.
Oh, that's fine. Okay, cool. I won't say it. That's fine. That's much better. Okay, I won't say it.
We'll see. But I don't think he'll be upset at this. I think it's his list mostly shifted down a little bit.
Yeah. I think, his list minus the excitement.
Yeah. Ironically, Too Fast, Too Furious is higher on this list than on his list.
Wow. Yeah.
Again, me and Kevin just have different, we have different opinions.
I'm looking at this. This might be the most content I have felt with.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
All right. Who would have thought a series that I talk so much crap about, like I'd be the happiest with the.
We're going to take a quick break on the other side. I think we have a review. We have a This Week in Movies. We'll let you know what's hitting theaters this week, but then we're going to play the Blend Game, which is our favorite summer blockbuster that flopped at the box office. But more on the other side.
And we are back. So for This Week in Movies, there's a movie that I realized today is coming to theaters, because so many movies coming out and you hear about them and then you think they're going to a streaming service of some sort. And this one's called Blackberry. I didn't know a ton about it, but it sounds pretty interesting. And then Jake, you said it was really good. So tell us why we should check it out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. This kind of falls in under that umbrella of trend of movies that are coming out basically about products. We're running out of superheroes, so now we're just doing a cinematic universe. You know, we've got, you know, everything from Facebook to Air about the Jordan shoes with Nike. We have a movie coming out about Flamin' Hot Cheetos. We had the Tetris movie.
Tetris was so good, by the way.
And then we've got the movie of the week is Blackberry, but it is actually a pretty phenomenal movie. Because you have to ask yourself, you know, I don't know if you guys ever had a BlackBerry at any point, but there was a point where it seemed like everyone had one. In fact, the statistic is that at its peak, around 2007, 2008, BlackBerry controlled 45% of the cell phone market. And today they control zero.
I mean, this is going to surprise nobody because I'm the old man on the show. But if I could still be using my BlackBerry, I would still be using my BlackBerry.
But see, that's the thing. That's that move. That it seems like everyone is saying that, and everyone, loved you know, it. Everyone's have such fond memories of it. So then, why did everyone stop using it? Why did it not become cool anymore?
It had none of the features. Yeah, it had no apps. It had no features.
There's a lot of elements to it. Not the least of which is that one of the people running the ship almost just abandoned BlackBerry to attempt to buy a hockey team, which is a subplot that I think you'll appreciate, Gabe. He attempted to buy the Penguins and move them to Canada.
Oh, wow.
Two incredible performances by Glenn Howerton from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Jay Baruchel, both of whom are fantastic. The movie has a lot of things about it that are going to make you laugh, but it's also very serious. Like the SEC were chasing these guys for some very serious crimes that they committed.
Oh, wow.
And it really does, you know, it's so funny. Like I said, just based on your reaction, how much you love BlackBerry, how does everyone have such fond memories of this thing that they wish they could still have, and yet everyone got rid of it? It's a really fascinating movie. I will say, like, when they first announced it, I kind of rolled my eyes and went, okay, all right, here we go. And then 30 minutes in, I was like, oh, like, you know, because oftentimes we have to watch movies for the junket, and I did in this case. But 30 minutes in, I was no longer watching it for the junket. I was watching it because I wanted to be. That's awesome. I'd very much recommend, if you get the chance, if it ends up streaming at any point, take 2 hours and watch
it. It's a limited release. I didn't see a theater count, so look for it if you can. I've heard great things about it. Jake's not the first person I've heard. I follow a lot of, like, tech reporters, and they you know, given their sort of expertise on the subject, hold it up as a really entertaining movie, but they like it from sort of the story that it tells about BlackBerry. So I think this is a bit of a win. I'm excited to see it.
Awesome. Let's transition into our blend game, which, as Gabe mentioned earlier, is Summer Flop Blend. This is a movie that came out in the summertime that had huge studio expectations and did not live up to those expectations, at least financially. So, Jake, kick us off. What is your choice for Summer Flop Blend?
So this was a difficult one because I think initially I had to just do some research on like what were some famous summer flops, not just flops in general, but flops that came out in the summer. I would have loved to have picked something like Grindhouse, but that came out in early April, so I feel like that doesn't really get to fall under this umbrella. So I might end up like changing my opinion if like 6 months from now I discover one that I didn't realize fell under this list. But for now, for today, I'm going to pick Speed Racer. I love Speed Racer when it came out. I love the Wachowski Speed Racer. I thought that the Wachowski siblings did just a beautiful, crazy, just super hyper kinetic, energetic, bright, colorful, kid friendly, but also kind of weirdly dark live action Saturday morning cartoon. For me, if you were to ask me what would take the Speed Racer cartoon that I watched growing up as a kid and make a live action movie, how do you make it most accurately? Like, that's it. Like, unless you want to completely like deassemble what Speed Racer was and reassemble it into something different and then call it Speed Racer, that's fine. But if like you're trying to stay true to what Speed Racer was, to me, that's it. And I really enjoyed it. It really seems like the narrative is kind of switching over in its favor, where people are coming around and going, you know, it really wasn't as bad as we gave it crap for being. It did not do well at all at the box office. I seem to remember it performing pretty badly for a movie that I think cost quite a bit. That was really like, you know, Emil Hirsch was pretty doing pretty well at that time. Matthew Fox was in the thick of Lost. You know, John Goodman had Susan Sarandon.
I forgot Matthew Fox was in that.
In fact, I actually Matthew Fox did The Junket, and I remember I interviewed him. I'm a huge Lost fan, as you guys know. And it was the week before the season 3 finale. And I just remember asking him like, oh, man, how crazy is the finale going to be? And he was, you know, he kind of gave me the generic, oh, man, yeah, your mind's going to be blown. You're going to dig it. And seriously, I'll never forget, as I was walking away, him like stopping me and going, hey, man, seriously, like, just wait. And that episode that ended up airing a few days later was We Have to Go Back. Speed Racer.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I hate Speed Racer. I hate
it.
I find it to be one of the most obnoxious films of all time. I watched it once. I haven't seen it again. I should probably go back and give it a shot because of how much everybody loves it. But it's just I it didn't connect with me in the least bit. So I am choosing a weird one. I was going to go Hudson Hawk, but it's too on brand.
I thought you would go Hudson Hawk.
So I'm going with Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, which in a just world should have been the launch of a very successful franchise, because there's infinite tales that you can tell with the Knights of the Round Table. And I thought that Ritchie's approach to that story was really, really great. And I would love to see where he continued to go. It was essentially an origin story for Arthur and the emergence of Excalibur. And then there's so many places you could have gone with that. And I think Guy Ritchie has had a couple of different examples, like Man from U.N.C.L.E., where he has had the ability to potentially launch what looks to be an interesting franchise and it doesn't go anywhere. And I forget when King Arthur came out, like whether it was just the competition or people didn't get into it. It wasn't well received. But I thought it was a terrific movie. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it felt almost Ridley Scott-esque in terms of its scope and the way that it shot its battle scenes. And I thought that what's his face?
That's a spirit.
Was the perfect lead for it. Who's the guy? Who's the main guy?
Charlie Hunnam.
Charlie Hunnam, who I don't really love in most things. He's borderline forgettable to me, but it was terrific. I think he's terrific in this. I don't watch Sons of Anarchy. I guess that's like his.
He was great in that.
I know him primarily from Pacific Rim, and I thought, and I thought he was terrific in King Arthur. So looking over the recent bit of flops, I will choose that. So let's start to Kevin, who does have a pick, and see what he goes with for his choice for summer movie flop blend.
All right, hey guys, sorry I had to miss the show today. I was traveling to New York for work for an interview, and I just wanted to chime in on the topic this week, which is the summer blockbuster film that flopped, but our favorite movie that did that. So it's interesting. I when I first heard this topic, I was interested to know. I was like, wait, what other summer blockbusters have I loved that weren't successful at the box office? And I was going through a bunch of lists of like just different summer blockbusters that had flopped over the years. And the one that caught my attention, at least for me, was Event Horizon. Because in 1997, I remember seeing that film. I was 13. I saw it in theaters with my dad. I'm pretty sure my mom may have been there, but I know my dad and I were definitely there. I still have my ticket for it. And I remember being so scared by that film. According to Newsweek, the budget for the film was about $60 million. And I'm looking at boxofficemojo.com right now, and it has a $26 million domestic total. $587 is all it made internationally for a worldwide gross of $26 million. $26.6 million, if you want to be precise. Which clearly is a major flop considering the budget, according to Newsweek, which was $60 million. But I loved this film. I remember being absolutely terrified by it. It scared me. I remember seeing it in theaters and being freaked out. There was this sequence, every scene with Sam Neill's character as he was dealing with like the visions of his wife when he was in those closed spaces. It was so scary. And then there was this one particular death I remember, and I haven't seen the movie in a long time because I remember being so scared by it, where there was a person that was killed and then their body was like hung up by the ceiling, and like their like basically their stomach was like ripped out, and like it was just disgusting. It was absolutely disgusting. But it scared me, and I just remember that film being horrifying, and that's a Paul W.S. Anderson film. And yeah, and it's a great, and listen, it's a really solid horror film. It's a horror sci-fi film, and Lawrence Fishburne's great in it, Sam Neill. I recommend seeing it for sure. I mean, it's a film that I think is kind of severely underrated, which kind of fits perfectly into this concept of a summer blockbuster that bombed. So I just wanted to chime in on that. Missed you guys this week, and looking forward to being back with the show next week. I love you guys. And I'm curious who else chose Event Horizon. I think Event Horizon might even have been the GIF that that Gabe used for the tweet this week. So let me know. All right, I'll see you guys in the text thread.
All right, let's get to audience picks. Matthew Valenti said Solo, a Star Wars story. Jake, that would have been a good one for you to choose.
Yeah, I mean, do we want to call that a bomb? I mean, does that fall under the umbrella of bomb, or is that underperform for sure?
Yeah, flop. We said flop. Yeah. You know, flop a little bit of what was the budget on that? Because that was a big part of it. The budget was like almost $300 million.
Yeah, well, because of all the reshoots. Remember, we discussed this recently in one of the premium episodes.
Right.
That was it was a $275 million, and it didn't even make $4 million.
Yeah.
So think about the marketing.
Sure.
Harry Lichtman said In the Heights, another good choice of one that's great seemed choice. Like it was going to do really well.
Yeah.
Rue says 2012's Dread. I agree with that. That's a really good cult classic now at this point, but definitely should have done better. Indy Christina, great choice. Lightyear. She said Lightyear. I think Lightyear is terrific. And for some reason, I never saw it.
Did you really?
I never saw it.
Oh, dude, it's really good. You should catch up on it. It's a really fun space adventure flick.
Yeah. This is the audience's reaction to Lightyear was just no. Like they refused to accept the fact that movie exists. But I literally watched it on Disney Plus like 2 weeks ago, and it's just great. It's really great. It's holds up really well. And then Sebs, Michael Breen, Casey Free, and many, many others went with The Iron Giant. Terrific choice. So thank you very much for everybody participating this week. Next week, you can play along with, here we go, # Fast and Furious Blend. Let us know your pick for your all-time favorite Fast and Furious Blend. Now, didn't we just give away our answers if we only gave one S?
Sort of, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but Kevin wasn't here. You guys will be able to talk more about it. But again, right, this is more about the audience. Let the audience participate.
That's a good point. Yeah. Our next premium episode for people who subscribe to the service is going to be the IMDb game that we're going to play. Again, if you want to figure out how to join the premium service and get those bonus episodes on Monday, check the description for wherever you are listening to the podcast at the moment. In the meantime, because we're going to be seeing some really fun things coming up, including Fast X and Little Mermaid. And I'm going to watch Air on Friday because people should know that Air is coming to Amazon. Yes, I'm excited to see it. It's finally available to stream. So follow us on social media for our reactions to such things like that. At Jake's Takes. At Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach, and the show is at Real Blend. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Real Blend. We're lining up some fun guests for the future, but until then, Larry Crown. I did that for you for tonight, Jake.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Larry Crown.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.